Blog Talk Radio.
And on this Memorial Day Monday, we welcome you, teeing it up.
Hold on. It helps when you change the play settings. Here we go. There's the theme song and live from the studios of Teeing It Up in the Pumps of Jersey. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, a special Tuesday edition on this May 31st Tuesday. It's 80 degrees under sunny skies the day after the Golden State Warriors get themselves to another NBA Finals. This is the second consecutive one. That means we welcome in our friend Kyle DeMannencourt, who I'm sure is excited to talk about Jordan Spieth's finish at the Dean and DeLuca Invitational.
You know I love me some golf.
Look, let me get to this monologue really fast. We knew Jordan was going to bounce back strong. He did. He finished strong. He made long putts. That's what Jordan Spieth does, and when he does it well, he helps him win golf tournaments, and he's now smooth sailing on his way towards Oakmont. More on him in the next couple of weeks. His buddy who he has yet to play golf with, by the way, he says that'll happen this summer, but his buddy, Steph Curry, went off in the fourth quarter and put in a Spieth-like finish last night as Golden State ousted Oklahoma City. Kyle, going into last night, what was your expectations, and how did last night live up or not live up or surpass those expectations?
Well, I mean, it was an epic game, epic series, obviously. Even people that I had talked to that aren't really into the NBA were tuned in, and that's always great to hear. And after Golden State, you know, winning game six in OKC, you could kind of feel that momentum shift and they got their swag back a little bit. So, you know, my expectation going into last night was, personally, I thought Golden State would come out and jump on them right away. Obviously, that didn't happen. OKC started out great again. But as the game went on, OKC kind of reverted back to their old habits, as Billy Donovan said in the post-game conference last night, where, you know, they were kind of playing hero ball a little bit in the fourth quarter with Russ and KD, and weren't really getting the role players involved and making some silly turnovers and, kind of what they were doing for most of the regular season. And Golden State just, they jumped on, they took advantage, and they hit their shot. Their three-point shooting was ridiculous.
Here's what's interesting to me about last night. I actually didn't think that Oklahoma City's start was anything exceptional in this sense. Steph was quiet. Clay was 0 for 7 in that start. They were rushing things. They were making stupid turnovers. And you heard Steve Kerr say at the half, I love the effort. I love that you guys have brought it, but you're actually trying too hard and you're overdoing it. And we're going to win by playing our system, not by, you know, giving 110%. Not by giving 110% of undisciplined energy. And in the second half, you know, for me, that started with the Steph bucket coast to coast to end the first half. His knee was okay. And they rode that wave to whatever it was, like an 11-2 run or something like that. That, I thought, was the turning point. And for me, it wasn't so much Oklahoma City's start. Yes, it was an exceptional start. But for me, Golden State wasn't playing well. And when Golden State finally played well, everything got into motion for them, especially defensively, and that then impacted Oklahoma City's sequence.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. Golden State definitely came out flat. I thought at times they were being a little too cute with the ball, especially Curry, dancing a little bit more than he should have been with the ball, taking some tougher shots. Clay was a little rusty, obviously, out of the gate, and he's a rhythm shooter, of course. Draymond making some bad plays and bad turnovers. So, yeah, you're right. Golden State definitely came out a little rusty, which, I didn't expect that. And not just rusty, but they were just a little out of sync, a little out of sorts. And I don't know if it was, you know, playing in front of that Rockets home crowd and, you know, if nerves played a part in it. But, you know, you credit OKC with how they came out. Of course, they jumped out to a good lead and they looked good at times. But, yeah, as you said, it was more, you know, Golden State, you kind of have this feeling that, all right, we're just waiting for them to burst open here. They're not playing their best ball. And like Kurt, like you said about Steve Kerr, I mean, when he was mic'd up last night during the broadcast of the game, you know, there was one point where he said, hey, guys, we were down 13 in game six. And once we get into our rhythm, start playing some defense, force some turnovers, we're fine. I mean, we'll play our kind of basketball. And you can start to see that gradually, forcing turnovers, getting after it on defense, leading to easy buckets on offense. And that's Warriors basketball.
Yeah. I was going to say something. I forgot what it was. We'll get back to that in a second. If you hear me call them Oklahoma State, leading into last night, I was watching the NCAA Men's Golf Championships. And Oklahoma State was in the bubble, and they were showing a lot of Oklahoma State. So if I call them Oklahoma State, that's because before the game last night, I was watching Oklahoma State. So, you know, that's my disclaimer on that. Can you explain to me why they did not foul with 40 seconds left in the game? Because this is just mind-boggling to me. They get this run, and Golden State goes up by like 11 or 12 or 13, whatever it was, and then they cut it to like 4 or 5, and there was a point there where I think it was 6, and they should have fouled with 40 seconds left. I don't know what the heck they were doing. Steph hits the dagger 3, poses for the camera, Twitter goes nuts. Why didn't they foul there?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if they were just stunned at what had happened or what was about to happen, and they just kind of lost track of what was going on with time and everything, but I don't want to say that they had given up at that point. I mean, you know, they're one of the most relentless, if not the most relentless team in the NBA, and this series proved a lot of that. But I don't know. I don't know if Billy, you know, Donovan just didn't give him that direction. Obviously, the players should know as well. You know, in that situation, they kind of foul, try to get another body language. Once Golden State made that run, you can kind of tell the Thunder, I don't know, they looked a little out of it. Like they got hit with a right and they just couldn't respond. And they were, you know, yelling at each other, which is what we've seen in the past with the Thunder. Very frustrated, very vocal and not the right way. And you can hear Chris Webber talking about it too, that the body language, and they were only down by a couple at that point and they were already looked like they were defeated. So I don't know if mentally at that point they were just struck.
Yeah, it was very weird to say the least. You got that right. This is, you know, Charles talked about it on Inside. The guys talked about it on the broadcast. That sequence where Russ took the circus 3 that I don't know what the heck he was doing, and they came down, Golden State did, and I think hit a 3 or a 2, and it was essentially a flip there, and then they got another basket right after that. That whole sequence, I think, and they were right to say that might have been the turning point, because I think that encapsulated hero ball. That here's Russ taking an absolutely stupid, pitiful, way off balance 3, and it just got flipped on them.
Yeah, and that's the problem with OKC, obviously. You know, those two guys, KD and Russ, tend to, you know, when games in crunch time, and obviously rightfully so, they are the alphas on that team, but they get a little trigger happy and take, you know, contested, difficult shots. And their teammates aren't really involved. And, you know, look, through game 7, the rest of the roster in the Thunder, those role players, had been terrific. I mean, that's the reason they were up 3-1. And for whatever reason, they just, like Billy said, they reverted back to their old habits last night and they took some bad shots. I mean, Westbrook, as great as he is, very out of control. Durant just looked very timid, very passive, and Golden State capitalized.
Yeah, it's it is, it really, I think when we talk about maturity of teams, and this is my next thing, is kind of what's the future for OKC. So much of their progress, I thought, this season was Russ and KD being good complementary players to Steven Adams and to Ibaka and to Robertson, who I think really opened a lot of people's eyes. When you look at the NBA as a whole, as a guy that not only is a defensive specialist, but can score if used correctly and in the right sets. And for me, that became not selfish, but I'm going to take care of this myself, Russ and KD, that were so polarizing and have been for so many years. And I think going forward, as you look at Oklahoma City's future, they got to figure out what they want to do and what pieces want to be complementary to each other, because it didn't work in crunch time. And a maturation of a team is seeing how you respond in crunch time, and Oklahoma City did not do that.
No, you're right. And obviously now the question will be Kevin Durant and you know, what he's going to do in free agency. Personally, if I were Kevin Durant, I mean, I know money's obviously a big thing. You know, I don't blame him if he's going to chase the money, but, I, you know, I would stay in OKC for another year and do a 1-1 type contract where you got an opt-out, after that first year, player opt-out. We know Westbrook and Ibaka next year is their last year under contract with the Thunder. So, you know, KD will re-up for another year and, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that they'll be right back where they are or where they were right now. They just need to add maybe one more piece, a scorer off the bench. I would say, I mean, you know, Waiters is probably going to be gone. I know he's been talking about for a while getting a max deal from somebody, and if somebody gives them that, then they're crazy. But, you know,
he is not deserved.
Waiters is one of those guys where I think he thinks he's better than he really is. But it all starts with KD. I mean, Steven Adams, you saw this is his coming out party. I mean, he's always been a pretty good player, but what he did in these playoffs, especially this series, was fabulous. I mean, he proved not only is he a tough defensive player, very physical, but he could score the ball. He's got some nice post moves, and he's still developing. He's still a pretty young player. Cantor, very, very, very good offensive player off the bench, not so much defensively, but, man, he can rebound on offense. He could score. So they just got to bring maybe another piece or two that, you know, could kind of relieve that pressure in crunch time on KD and Russ, but at the same time doesn't demand the ball. And that's the hard thing with the NBA is trying to find that kind of guy who can score but doesn't demand the ball every possession.
Yeah. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, sign the one-year deal, then the TV contracts kick in, the money goes crazy, see what you want to do then. It's going to be fascinating because, you know, I keep hearing Warriors, 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 and I don't see why he would do that. I don't see why he'd want to join Steph and all of them. Something tells me Kevin Durant wants to be able to say, I did this. And Russell wants to be able to say, I did this. And not, I went and joined the team and was their last piece for a team that had already won two titles potentially and just kind of fit right in and then went to the promised land. It doesn't seem like the story. Like LeBron got his ring, but he left because he wants to be the hero in Cleveland sports lore forever. And I just don't see KD doing that.
Yeah, my personal opinion, I think, if I had to say of the two of Russ and KD, I think Durant would be more inclined to join one of those teams, to join San Antonio or Golden State, whereas Russ does his own thing. I mean, we see what he wears, how he dresses, how he acts. I mean, he walked off the court last night at the end of the game and, you know, didn't really shake anybody's hands. He didn't really acknowledge anybody. He'd called out Curry previously in the media saying that he's, you know, a Boy Scout and, you know, he's got nothing. And so Westbrook's going to do Westbrook. I really do think Durant really does want that ring. Sure, he would love to get it on his own, like, I mean, every player. But, you know, ever since LeBron, when he went to Miami, it kind of changed the landscape of the NBA where, you know, these guys are trying to get together and form these super teams, if you want to call it that, and get that ring. So it'll be interesting to see what Durant does. He'll have a ton of money thrown at him. Everybody in the NBA should at least try to make a pitch to him. Couldn't hurt. And, you know, ultimately, if I had to say, I would say that he's going to stay in OKC for another year and see what they have for one more run, maybe.
One last thing on the Thunder. If you have not read it, go to USA Today, Google USA Today, Oklahoma City Thunder Equipment Manager. It's this great story about their guy who basically went from being an intern to the guy in the video department, to the equipment guy, to the guy who helps run team logistics, whatever. His best friends in life are Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Nick Collison, and they helped him set up his proposal to his now fiance in this very elaborate scheme. It is such a fun read, and it shows you how close KD and Russell and Nick Collison are, and also how close these guys get in what so many people have described as a college-like atmosphere there in Oklahoma City. It's a fantastic read. I highly recommend it. We're talking to Colin DeMannencore and teeing it up. All right, let's now spin forward the people who actually still have more basketball left in their season. What Steph Curry did last night down the stretch, you are a Bulls fan. You live through Jordan. You worship Jordan. Was that Jordan-esque?
Yeah, I mean, that was otherworldly. I mean, you look at the way he creates off the dribble. I mean, his ball handling, and look, you know, I wasn't around, obviously, in the early 80s to see, you know, Isaiah and all those great players, Magic with the ball. But watching Curry's ability to evade defenders by using his ball handling. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. And not only that, but his ability just to shoot off the dribble. I mean, I'm talking a contested deep three-pointer, and half the time he's not even set. I mean, you could tell his hips are pointing in the wrong direction or his feet are pointed outward, and he's a marksman. I mean, he's money in the bank when it comes to those type of shots, and he did it over and over again last night over seven-footers, and it seemed effortless for him. I mean, it just seemed it was a practice shot. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, there were times where I had to catch myself watching that game last night thinking, did that really just happen? Did he really just do that? And, I mean, it's amazing. It really is.
Sorry to hear that you're out of breath.
Yeah, I mean, that was it took my breath away.
Yeah, exactly. All right, NBA Finals, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, ABC. On paper, and this was pointed out by, I think it was Bomani Jones or Dan Lebatard or somebody when I was channel surfing before, that here's a Cavs team. They lost 4-2 last time. No Kyrie Irving, no Kevin Love. Obviously, those guys are healthy. LeBron has much better complementary pieces. So if we start at the starting point that the last series went 6, we start at the starting point that the Thunder, who were as deep a team as the Warriors had faced all year, took them to 7. And that the Cavs with Shump and with JR and Dellavedova and now with Channing Frye and some of these other pieces have been able to stretch their lineup. To me, this series looks very, very even on paper. What's your initial take on this series?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, each team has 3 stars, and I include Draymond in there, obviously, for Golden State. And, you know, LeBron last year, I mean, he went Terminator mode in the finals and willed them to 2 games. I mean, his numbers were, you know, out of this world. So, you know, this year he's got the help. I don't think there can be any excuse this year if they can't get it done. I mean, he's got his coach. He's got his guys. They are as healthy as they've been. Their system, obviously, is fitting them nicely. They're very up-tempo. They're honestly, if you want to talk about offensive style, they're the same as the Warriors. I mean, they're a pace and space type team. So, you know, you're kind of playing fire with fire here. But on paper, absolutely. I mean, there's star power all over the place. Now comes the question with matchups. I mean, Kevin Love, as great as he is on offense, he'll give the Warriors trouble, obviously, when he's on offense in the pick and roll, but his defense pick and roll basketball is terrible. That's why you haven't seen him play many fourth quarters in the playoffs, because he's a liability on defense. And the Warriors love pick and roll basketball, and they will find your weakest defender and they will exploit it all game. And you know, we may not see a lot of Kevin Love in the fourth quarter potentially, but at the same time, how much of an upgrade is Channing Frye in that regard? I mean, look, Frye's older. He's been great for them. He's been the knockdown three-point shooter. But defensively, if you're talking about putting him in a pick-and-roll with Draymond Green, I mean, can he really stay in front of Draymond Green? I don't know. I don't think so. So that's going to be interesting with matchups there. And if you look at the two teams, it's going to be a high-scoring final. It's probably going to be one of the higher ones we've ever seen. Three-point records will be broken, in my opinion, in this finals. It's inevitable, yeah, with how many three-point shots these teams take. And, you know, you're going to have another jump-shooting team win the finals, regardless of if it's Golden State or Cleveland. They're both jump-shooting teams at this point.
You are so right about records falling. I want to interrupt this finals analysis for this. Where the heck did Richard Jefferson come from, and how is this person still in the NBA?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because, I mean, if whatever he's drinking, you know, I'd like to have some of that. So,
yeah, he likes, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's hot,
this
hot
guy was part of the kid. He was part of the Kid Carter Jefferson Big Three, which was like the Big Three of like 15 years ago. And he's still in the NBA. Now he's into the finals, and he's been playing well for them, which is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, he's a hot tub time machine. I mean, he's found something to keep him going. He's obviously always been an athletic player, so he still has some of his athleticism, which is obviously helping him. But he's developed a more reliable outside shot, which, you know, once you get to his age, you have to do to kind of stick in the league. And he's almost, if I had to say, he's their version of Andre Iguodala. He can hit that three. You know, he plays respectably good defense. He can guard multiple players, multiple positions. So he's going to be key for them. I mean, they're going to have to go to him a lot, especially with the Warriors' small ball lineups. So he's a huge part of what Cleveland's going to have to do if they want to be successful.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really fascinating how a guy that seemingly has come back out of nowhere could be a deciding factor. It's one of the beauty. It's one of the most beautiful parts of sports. All right. It's June. It's LeBron James, which means it can only be one thing, which is the C word, which is cramps. The guy cramps more in the NBA Finals than anybody I've ever seen in my life. However, he's got a better supporting cast. So a two-part question. A, do you think we'll see LeBron James cramp in this series? And B, do you think Tyronn Lue can manage his minutes well enough so that if this series goes 6 or 7, he can actually be a productive player? Because one of the most beautiful things Steve Kerr did last night was get Barbosa and get Varejao minutes, which was able to keep Steph fresh late in the game, and it obviously paid off.
Yeah, you know, I don't foresee any issue cramping for LeBron in this finals. Like you said, he's got more help. He doesn't need to do as much as he did last year. He was all Terminator mode in last year's finals. He's not going to have to do that, hopefully for his sake, again this year. As far as Tyronn Lue, that's the big question. I mean, you saw, you know, last series versus Toronto, he kind of made a rookie coach mistake where, you know, he didn't really know what to do at the end of the game. I mean, LeBron played 46 minutes. That's insane. For how many miles that he has on his body over the years, you can't play LeBron James 46 minutes. Will it happen in the finals? I'm sure there's going to be a game where, depending on what the situation is, where the, you know, the series is at, that LeBron may play 46 minutes. I mean, he's built for this. They have to win this year. I mean, this is a boom or bust year, absolutely, for Cleveland and to an extent for Golden State as well. But that's going to be interesting to see the chess match between Kerr and Tyronn Lue. And, you know, Kerr did the same thing last year as a rookie coach versus Blatt. So, you know, Kerr's 2 years in a row now where Kerr's dealing with rookie coaches in the finals. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Last night in Game 6, the fourth quarter, proved to me that Steph Curry's okay. So let's push aside Steph Curry because I think he's going to be all right, and I think we will get the Steph Curry that we saw during the regular season out of him. So let's just put that aside for a second. Let's start with Golden State, and then we'll go to Cleveland. What is to you the most important indicator early on that this team is playing well enough consistently to win? And obviously this is going to be a long series, so, you know, game one indicators are not, you know, gospel, but what for you is the sign? Because for me, it is Klay Thompson in rhythm. Klay Thompson last night and in game 6 finally got into a nice rhythm for himself, and it paid off. He had struggled at times the same way Steph had. B, Draymond Green is either sensational or a complete idiot, and he was a complete idiot in game 2 of last season, and he's still, I don't think the points reset. He is still one flagrant point away from a suspension. For me, Draymond Green has to be powerful but not idiotic. That is a huge sign for me over how Golden State will play, because this series could be decided on somebody getting suspended.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. I'll start with Draymond Green. He has to be smarter this series. There's no doubt about it. His margin for error is very slim at this point. I think one more flagrant foul, as you said. I believe it's 2 more technical fouls, and it's a suspension. He needs to be smarter, and I believe that he will be. But again, he's such a wild card, and you really don't know. He's got some Rodman antics in him that he's so full of energy and so full of passion that sometimes, as we've seen in this past series, it comes out in the wrong way. You know, he wants to win so bad that sometimes he gets caught up in doing whatever it takes, and he's getting that reputation now as a dirty player, so the refs are clearly going to be focused on him. The only thing with Draymond that I would say that works in his favor this series is that he's not going to have to go up against a guy like Steven Adams. Steven Adams will get in your head. He will do whatever he can to push your buttons. The Cavs don't really have that guy. Tristan Thompson's not that guy. I mean, sometimes you forget Tristan Thompson's even on the court. You don't even feel his presence.
Yeah.
They don't really have that player. The only thing I would worry about is, you know, LeBron driving to the basket and Draymond taken a hard foul. I mean, we know how Draymond feels about LeBron. There's no love lost there. So, but other than that, I don't see a guy thoroughly getting under Draymond's skin. Draymond's his own worst enemy. If he can just play under poise and under composure, he's going to be fine. But, you know, that's the big question with him. And hopefully, I'm sure Kerr and, you know, the guys will talk to him and say, hey, we need you. We're not going to win this series without you. So he's got to be smarter. That's definitely the biggest key for me. And to your point on Clay, yeah, Clay's such a rhythm player. I mean, he's got to come out, you know, shooting well and get his shot going early, because he's not really a playmaker with the ball. On offense, he's more of a cutter, which he does a great job with that, getting to the basket. But in his defense with this series, he's not going to have to chase around a Westbrook or a Durant. You know, they may put him on, you know, LeBron at times, but or Kyrie, but if I had to guess, most of the time would be on J.R. Smith maybe. J.R. Smith hardly goes into the paint. I mean, J.R. Smith lives around the three-point line. It doesn't really move. So in that regard, Clay is probably going to save a little energy. Now, I'm sure they're going to put him on Kyrie just because of how athletic Clay is as a defender. You saw at times how he did against Westbrook. So I just don't think he'll have to exert as much energy this series as far as chasing guys around defensively.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue into my two keys for Cleveland, which is we saw how huge Tristan Thompson was last year. He was a rebounding beast. He was there every single time boxing out underneath. Where was he last series? He was AWOL. If he can be the Tristan Thompson he was last season, not the Tristan Thompson who held out before this season and wanted some money and all that crap, that I think is a huge difference. And J.R. Smith, Mike Green talked about it last series. He has gone from being good J.R., bad J.R., to being good J.R. and a good defender, which is unheard of as a Knicks fan. I mean, like, where was this guy 3 years ago? But for me, if J.R. Smith gets in rhythm, much like staying, Stay, there's a brand new Splash Brother. It's Steph and Clay combined to Stay. But if J.R. can get in rhythm and then be a good contributor defensively, that's a huge boost for Cleveland, because that's yet another thing LeBron doesn't have to do.
No, you're right absolutely about J.R. He's like Clay. He's a rhythm shooter, and when he gets hot, I mean, he can get as hot as anybody in the league. He's such a wild card for them, and the only thing I worry about with him defensively, if they throw him on Clay, that's a lot of running around for him to do on defense. Clay does not stop moving. I don't think I really ever see a possession where Clay is just standing there the entire 24 seconds. So that'll be interesting to see where they decide to put JR on defense. But, yeah, if he's hot offensively, I mean, that's such a huge weapon for the Cavs. And for Tristan Thompson, you saw last series, Biombo just completely outworked him. He doesn't play well typically against more physical, bigger centers. I think he can do well against Bogut. I think, honestly, you know, his Bogut best days are behind him, unfortunately, but, you know, he can still give you something. I could see Thompson struggling a little bit with Azili because he's bigger, he's more physical, he's a little bit like Biombo. So that'll be an interesting matchup. And in a whole, you know, if you look at Cleveland in whole, Thompson just has to be that guy that does the dirty work. I mean, that's his role. He gives you nothing on offense. He is a good defender. He plays well in that pick-and-roll offense with Dellavedova, but we've seen those alley-oops. But, you know, he's got to be their enforcer down low. And you know, Golden State at least knows what they're getting when they play Tristan Thompson. I mean, they saw it last year.
You got that right. Really quickly, a 15-second answer. They let him go last night in terms of physicality, the officials did in Game 7, which I thought was great. Do you think we'll see that over the course of this series?
Oh, I really hope so. I really hope that the officials don't determine any outcome of any game. I want to see them play. I thought last night was perfect. I hope we get 7 games or however many games of that.
And finally, this all leads to Kyle DeMenencourt's pick for the NBA Finals.
Well, I mean, hey, 73-9 don't mean a thing without a ring. So I think Golden State knows what they have to do to finish the season and call it a true success. I still truly believe they have a chip on their shoulder versus Cleveland from last year, that people saying they got lucky that Cleveland had just one player basically on their team. So I think Golden State remembers that. I think they get it done. I think they have too many offensive weapons and the ability to switch multiple positions on defense. So my prediction is Golden State in 6.
I say Golden State in 7, but not surprised if the Cavs win. And have you been taking rap classes? 73-9 doesn't mean a thing without a ring?
Hey, that was the old school motto with the Bulls, 96 Bulls, 72-10, don't mean a thing without a ring, so I guess you got to apply it to this one.
There you go. Kyle DeMannencourt, thanks so much. That's today's
Teeing
It Up. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the NBA Finals, and Kyle's back next week, too. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.